Political Action Committee of Mayor Lenny Curry gets scammed out of $120,000. So just how do these PACs work and who's watching where the money goes? Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Charlene Shirk and today for Melissa Ross. We're always live here at 9 and make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Also ahead, we're going to speak with Florida Times Union reporter Nate Monroe about local and state PACs and the so-called dark money that flows through them, and how these Nigerian scams have really gone high tech. So if you've been scammed, or if you are a security expert, this is your moment. Give us a call at 549-2937. Then later, our monthly Woman with Heart recipient, Dr. Ilana Schrader, joins us about the great work of volunteers in medicine. Plus, we have a live in-studio performance by singer-songwriter Madison Carr. All of that and more ahead. Going to be a great hour, but we are going to start with what everybody is talking about and kind of snickering about when they heard earlier this week that last year a political action committee of Mayor Lenny Curry got scammed out of $120,000. Now, a lot of people, hey, let's, you know, don't be ashamed if you've fallen victim to one of these things, because they are out there, they are high tech, they are skilled in developing these scams. But it brings up the question, where's the money from these PACs coming from? And who's watching where they're going? How's the money tracked? And how is it getting politicians elected? So to talk about what happened to Mayor Curry's PAC and how such PACs operate, we are now joined by Florida Times Union reporter Nate Monroe, who has reported extensively on the PACs of local politicians. Nate, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we've been talking about this. You came in the studio. I haven't stopped talking about this. It's such an interesting topic. So again, I want to give the number out, because we'd love for you to be a part of this conversation. 549-2937. If you're a security expert, or if this has happened to you, please give us a call and be part of the conversation. So, Nate, let's back up a little bit before we get to the juicy part of this conversation. And let's talk about what PACs are and how they work.
Sure. So I think most often when people talk about money in politics, they're referring to what are called super PACs. And those are organizations that exist and are influencing elections for people running for federal offices. On a state level, however, in Florida, we also have what are called political committees. And these political committees operate in a similar fashion to so-called super PACs, but there are some key differences. One of the key similarities is that these super PACs and the state political committees, like the one the mayor uses, can accept donations from individuals and corporations in unlimited amounts. So these committees,
and from anywhere, even though it's a state PAC, from anywhere in the world?
I don't know about like foreign donations, but generally, like if a company wants to give a bunch of money, or if a developer mm-hmm. wants to give, you know, $1 million, they can write $1 million check right to that group.
Right.
Now, one of the differences between super PACs on a federal level and political committees here is that super PACs are supposed to have a firewall. So they can support candidates, but they can't directly coordinate with those candidates' mm-hmm. campaigns. And violating that firewall is actually a pretty serious problem. In Florida, political committees are permitted to coordinate with campaigns. They are basically extensions of candidates' campaigns. And that's an important distinction. Build something that lasts, which is the committee that was defrauded by these scammers. That was a group that the mayor set up after he took office. He's the first mayor of Jacksonville to have an active political committee while he is the mayor that's raising money and spending money. And so that's part of what makes this kind of remarkable. I guess the brief overview of this is that there is a guy named Eric Robinson. He is a certified public accountant in Sarasota. He's a school board member down there. He is the chairman, treasurer, and registered agent of Build Something That Lasts. He's the only person on paper who is affiliated with Build Something That Lasts. Although we know that it is the mayor's political committee and he can sort of direct how it's spent. Eric Robinson got scammed into sending 5 different wire transfers totaling about $120,000 because someone using a phone number that originated out of Luxembourg called him and impersonated one of the mayor's fundraisers and told him to send money to four different addresses and five different wire transfers. And that's sort of how that was like the basic that was like the basic setup of the scam.
But this caller actually used the name of one of Lenny Crew's actual fundraisers.
Right.
He did some homework. And that's the thing with these scammers is they do their homework. It's not the old scam of I'm a Nigerian prince and I have $1,000 or millions of dollars locked up. And if you send me $1,000 and I'll share my money with you. I mean, these things, I think when you first hear about it, you're like, are you serious? They got scammed by that. But when you look more into it, there was clearly a lot more thought that went into it, because not only did they impersonate an actual person, but they asked for things like for catering and things that you would ask for if you were going to form a fundraiser. But I guess, Nate, my question is why all these alleged fundraising events that he was asking money for were not in the state of Florida. So why would that make any sense to begin with? How would Lenny Curry be having fundraising events outside of the state of Florida?
Yeah, so that was, I think, the most striking part of this story is that, and you're right. And
why wouldn't that just raise questions, you know, red flags?
Exactly. And you know, we can talk about the sophistication of the scam, which was more, it was a little bit more involved, you're right, than, you know, just send me money and you'll find riches and happiness. The CPA who was in charge of this organization was told by a voice on the phone to make what were really some pretty outlandish wire transfers. These five expenditures stood out on the committee's expense reports to such a degree that, a colleague and I had actually flagged these ourselves, and we were literally in the process of backgrounding. Like, we tracked down the guy in Wyoming who was supposedly a caterer. We figured out fairly quickly he was not a caterer. So we were kind of doing our own look into this when we found out, you know, that the backstory was that it was a result of a scam. But we knew kind of intuitively that there was something wrong, that there was no way that the mayor, no reasonable explanation for why the mayor would be spending, you know, $40,000 on a caterer in Wyoming. And so you're right. It is weird that a CPA, or it seems weird that a CPA signed off on these without
asking a question.
Apparently that it didn't occur to him to ask this question or.
Well, Nate, that shows a disconnect. He's not communicating with what the actual folks who are planning, if they were to plan a fundraiser, if they were to plan an event, there's not communication. So I think that begs the bigger question, who's watching the money and who's making sure that the money is dispersed in a responsible and accountable way? And why do we care? Well, there's rules and regulations over these PACs. So who's watching the farm, if you will, or the hen house, if you will, to make sure that this was a scam? Well, what if it was an illegal request that violated these types of regulations and he's just sending money out? And not to pile on him, anybody who's accountable for these types of PACs and the money is not doing the checking of the box to make sure that this is part of the rules and regulations allowed with a PAC.
Right. I mean, Eric Robinson is well known for representing these PACs on paper. He represents like dozens of these political committees. There's an issue about, is he just kind of a name on paper to obscure the true nature of what these committees do, to obscure who is really affiliated with them or what they're actually supporting? And it makes that conclusion a little bit easier to get to if you find out that he's really just there to do whatever he is told to do, regardless of, you know, again, like how outlandish a request might seem. I do think that raises a real question. And, you know, these political committees, they're financed by donor money. So this is not like taxpayers giving money, but these groups have enormous control they have enormous influence over our democratic process. I mean,
that's why that begs the question, where is the money legitimately or illegitimately being used? And let me ask you this, is this just an example of what your concern is, that how other PACs are also being run? Is this kind of what, when you say this is remarkable, is this why we're maybe getting a glimpse or behind the curtain of what may actually be happening?
Yeah. And I think people who are part of the political process in Florida, recoil at the use of this term a little bit of dark money. But that's what this all of this is really about is dark money, that political committees have to report monthly their contribution records. So who gave them money and how they spent that money.
And that's what you were watching at the time.
Right. And that's what, maybe a less cynical person would point to and say, hey, like this isn't dark money. You see where it goes. Mm-hmm. And it's also good that we know that this is the mayor's committee, that he has no reason to hide that fact. At the same time, it is very easy to obscure the true nature of what the committee is spending, because the rules do not require the committees to be they can spend $10,000 on something as vague as consulting fees. And that can, consulting can be anything. And you won't know, you don't really know how that money was spent. And they're sort of on the different side of the coin on the contribution records. You see a lot of these committees move money to each other. So like one of Eric Robinson's other committees has at times moved thousands of dollars into the mayor's committee. And then you don't really know you don't know where that money came from. And if it goes to another committee after that, it's the idea that there's transparency in this is just kind of laughable.
Mm-hmm. And let's also let our listeners know how this scam kind of came to light. It's almost like a made-for-TV movie because Robinson was supposedly talking to the scammer. The scammer was giving him instructions as to where to send this money. And he thought he was talking to a gentleman by the name of Kevin Hoffman out of Tallahassee. And while Robinson is on the phone with the phony Kevin Hoffman, the real Kevin Hoffman calls. What do you do? What do you do at that point?
Sure. I mean, to have been a fly on the wall at that point, it would have been interesting. So we get these two, the case of these two Kevin Hoffmans, who is, by the way, a Tallahassee based fundraiser who has worked with the mayor for several years. So at that point, Eric Robinson files a police report, the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office, and they initiate an investigation. They look into this for a couple of months, do what seems like actually a pretty thorough job tracking down the origins of the scam to the degree they could. And then they don't develop any suspects, and they just kind of say in their police report that we doubt there are going to be any new developments. They can't subpoena records from Nigeria or Luxembourg. And we learned about it because an independent journalist in Sarasota heard about the existence of this investigation and alerted us to it. And everything that I know is based almost solely on these police reports. And so we don't know. We did not find out about this by any effort of the committee or the mayor's office to indicate that it had been scammed.
Have they commented on this at all?
Yeah, the mayor's political operation. Their comment was essentially, as soon as we found out that there was wrongdoing, we alerted the authorities. The CPA, Eric Robinson, apparently reimbursed the committee for about $90,000. Mm-hmm. They claim that they were able to recover some of it. And so now, again, he also says he used other committees to reimburse Lenny's committee. That's the moving
of money around.
Yeah,
again.
And so there was no
comment though or response as we've put these maybe actions in place, like doing things like two-party validations or any type of checks and balances or anything of that nature. It was just more reactive. Oh, once we found out about it, we thoroughly investigated it.
Right, and Eric Robinson's company says that it has put new controls and better training in place. He is still the registered agent for that committee. He is also in charge of running a new political committee, Jacksonville on the Rise, that is affiliated with the mayor's reelection campaign. And again, that speaks to, do these committees, not just the mayor specifically, but broadly, do they want a CPA or an accountant or whoever is in charge to really be scrutinizing these expenses, or do they want someone running it who is just going to do what they say?
Yes, I mean, ma'am. That's, yeah. On that note, let me give the phone number again, because I think we're going to go down that rabbit hole in a second. But the number is 549-2937. Give us a call. If you're a security expert, if this is what you do for a living, give us a call, because we know these things have become very complex, very high tech. We'd love to talk to you. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this, or if you've been scammed, or if you were able to shut it down, caught it before some damage occurred. Again, the number is 549-2937. And Nate, I ask you that because if this, you know, these scammers now, and these Nigerian scams have become so high tech now, I'm going to tell a quick little story. A friend of mine has a company. And what happened to them is very consistent of what these groups are doing, is that they sent some malware and then they patiently watched email transactions back and forth, read mailboxes, and waited until they saw that a large money transfer was about to occur as a payment for project finished. And then they were able to send, just by changing like a capital letter to a small letter in the person's email, divert any legitimate email to that company's accountant to them, and communicated as if they were the accountant, and got over $200,000 sent to them. So you can imagine this small company, small to medium sized company, is saying, hey, where's our payment? And this other company's like, well, we paid you. And they know that they don't have the money. And luckily they were able to claw most of it back, but that's what happened. I mean, they were with changing just one little letter in an email, and who notices that, was able to then therefore bilk them out of two. And if you think for a small business, that could shut you down. I mean, that really could have devastating effects. So if these Nigerian scammers are onto the fact that PACs have hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars sitting in coffers with people not asking questions, I almost wonder how many of these other things have occurred and nobody's brought them to light, because A, it's embarrassing and you don't want anybody to know that this has occurred to you. And two, you don't want anybody to know that you're not watching where the money's supposed to be going.
Yeah, I mean, I the same question occurred to my colleagues and I after the story, that these PACs in sort of an inadvertent way may have made themselves the perfect mark for that kind of thing. There is a bit we don't know about how the scam originated in this case. The police reports are a little vague, but the best that I can tell, Kevin Hoffman, the Tallahassee-based fundraiser, the police said that just before this fraudulent activity started occurring, that his computer was accessed by an IP address originating in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Now, that could mean that Kevin Hoffman clicked on something on an email that gave mm-hmm. a hacker access to his computer. We don't exactly know. But yeah, there was some sort of, you know, whether it was like a phishing scam or something, that does seem to be the origin of it. But from that point, it was elaborate. I mean, it was impressive that these scammers, I guess, based on whatever information they had, were able to put together his affiliation with this political committee, and then sort of making the extra step of calling Eric Robinson and posing as Kevin Hoffman. I mean, that stuff, that is pretty sophisticated, even if the underlying issue, which is that an accountant was, you know, authorized these outlandish expenditures without asking a lot of questions, that is pretty basic. But the scheme behind it was pretty elaborate.
Well, and another interesting story, there was a treasurer out of Michigan who fell for one of these scams, and even his own kind of his employees around him were telling him, this looks suspicious, this looks suspicious. He kept sending them money, and when he realized that he had been defrauded, then started embezzling money to then cover up the fact that he had been scammed so that he didn't lose his job. He's the public treasurer in the Michigan County of Alcona, if I'm saying that correctly. And he basically stands now accused of embezzling taxpayers out of more than $1.2 million to cover up that he fell victim to this. So to your point, they may have just struck a gold mine by realizing that they can start going to public or political officials who aren't doing the correct accounting that they're supposed to be doing, for whatever reason that they are or not, and be able to tap into this. And so I guess what I'm wondering from your perspective now, Nate, is what are your thoughts in terms of how you move forward from this? And is this just an example of why you need better accountability and more transparency? Because, you know, on one hand, you said, well, maybe they don't always want people knowing exactly where the money's going. But now if they don't, then they don't even know where the money is going.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I am not a campaign finance expert. I am, you know, merely an observer of the process. And from my perspective, I do think that Florida's laws are a little bit like the Wild West when it comes to campaign finance. Again, these committees just operate with just an enormous amount of latitude. And it is very hard for me to see how that's ultimately very healthy for anybody except maybe politicians and the people who make money off the process. But those politicians are also the ones who write the laws, and that it perhaps suggests that they are unlikely to change if that's the way they want this.
So what's the big takeaway? Because you kind of made mention that, well, look, these aren't taxpayer dollars, which you'd see a little bit more outrage, I think, where this is more kind of like seriously, this happened to this person? Because these are willing donors. But to be fair, if I'm a donor, I still want to make sure that my money is going to the political will that I'm supporting.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think the political committee, itself is very aware of that dynamic. I mean, they went out of their way to say that no donor money was lost. That's not exactly true. I mean, they were reimbursed by the CPA's firm, but money was still lost. I mean, you wouldn't be reimbursed if there was money that hadn't gone out the tubes. So they were obviously very sensitive to the idea that donors may not be very happy, finding out that their money was lost in a scam, without a doubt.
And so what is the big takeaway from this? I mean, do you think there's going to be changes in accountability, if anything, within, Mayor Curry's PACs and how he's running his? I mean, do you think he's running around scrambling going, how did this happen? Let's make sure this doesn't happen. Or is this one of those things that you take the hit and you move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that they're just going to take the hit and move forward. I would be, again, these political committees and the laws that regulate them, I don't think those are going to change. If anything, you know, if it takes what was kind of a quirky story to at least make people a little bit more aware about the existence of these groups and what they do and the influence they have, that would, in its own small way, be a little bit of a win.
Yeah, because that's why I would hate to people just to dismiss this and say, you know, oh, you know, how did he fall for one of those things? You know, that's, everybody knows that. But I think to your point, it does shed some light on the fact that, no, I got to be honest with you, if you're going to throw a major fundraiser, a $40,000 catering bill is not that unreasonable from being an event organizer. You know, you got a couple 500 to 1,000 people, that's not unheard of. But I guess what raised the red flag to me is that this wasn't even in Florida. So to me, that was what was so odd, is why would he be fundraising in other states?
Yeah, that just didn't make any sense. And you know, again, when we had backgrounded some of the people affiliated with these addresses that had received the wire transfers, they were just very obviously not business people, or at least were not in, like, this guy out in Wyoming who got the money. He was not a caterer. He had no businesses registered to his name in the state of Wyoming. It was a similar case of this woman in Ohio who had received wire transfers. These just, again, there was obviously something wrong. I mean, we were, like I said, we were going to end up writing a story about this one way or another, because there was just, they were inexplicable. And other people in Jacksonville kind of political circles had noticed those expenditures too. We weren't the only ones who were just kind of scratching our heads over that.
Well, what do you think is the career future for this gentleman? As you mentioned, he's kind of oversees several other PACs. And is there going to be any type of accountability on his end? Because if you're running my PAC, I'm now a little concerned over how well you're watching where my money is going. I would think the ones that he's overseeing are now turning around and going, I want a full accounting of where the money's been going. Yeah. Or does that put you in a position, now I know what I know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, like I said, he's still working with the mayor's political committees. He's affiliated with dozens of others. He has been in the news before. You know, I think one newspaper accounting referred to him as like the prince of dark money. So, I mean, I don't think that negative press is something that may be new to Eric Robinson. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, he is an elected official down in Sarasota too. And I know that this story, had some play down there as well, but I don't know. Again, I guess it speaks to what it is that these political committees, really want, in, someone that they name a chairman of their organization.
And that's what I was going to ask you. What is the takeaway for, I guess, the general public in terms of when I either donate or are these more corporate? Is the funding coming from more corporations?
I mean, it's a lot of the individuals who give money are affiliated with corporations. So, I mean, I'd say I think you have both political and corporate interests that are contributing money to these groups.
So we on our Facebook page, we did have a couple folks who are suggesting how they could better mandate some of this stuff with video phone and face recognition and some computer verified voice would cure some of these problems. But to your point, it sounded like it was something as simple as just calling up the alleged caterer and confirming that this invoice did exist.
Yeah, apparently Eric Robinson did not have caller ID either. And that may or may not have contributed to why he was duped on the phone.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be laughing at that, but there just was no kind of checks and balances in place. Somebody's actually put a post on our Facebook page. Hi, I'm a Nigerian prince and I need WJCT's help to get him. I don't want to make light of it because it is a serious problem that's impacting a lot of businesses and people across the country and around the world, these scammers. So if anything, it is a lesson to make sure that you're putting in the proper security measures in place, particularly when we're talking about, you know, we did talk about what were some other countries' influences on our political process. And this really does bleed right into that conversation of now they're looking at how do we take the money from these political organizations and bilk them out of that money. And then you could get into a situation where they're holding that money for ransom.
Sure.
And having undue influence on these groups as well.
Yeah. I mean, money in politics is a huge, huge issue, especially when you expand it beyond a statewide level. And, you know, we could sit here all day and talk about it.
Well, Nate, I really hope you continue your investigation. I hope this is maybe just when you got kind of scooped on your scoop. So, because you were already down the road of revealing some of this information. So, if I know you, I know you, you are. This is not over for you. So, you will be. We're looking forward to more of your investigations down the road. Thanks so much for joining us this morning and kind of walking us through this whole process and giving us a better view of what occurred.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so don't go anywhere, everybody. We've got a lot coming up still ahead. Later, we're going to tell you about some great activities that are coming up at the beach and how you can kind of take a step back in time. But up next, our woman with heart for July is Florida Blues Dr. Ilana Schrader. She is an amazing woman. You do not want to miss our conversation. We'll be back in just a moment.
Mayo Clinic, where medical experts work together across specialties to improve diagnosis and treatment for patients with the most complex conditions. More at mayoclinic.org/Florida. Flagler College. Did you know its students and its visitors added the equivalent of 2,653 supported jobs to the Northeast Florida economy? Learn more at flagler.edu, The Flagler Effect.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Put on your overcoat and your dark glasses for the next Snap Judgment. We're going undercover. Subterfuge. Snap Judgment. Movies of the mind. Cinema of sound. Storytelling. Beat. Do not miss it.
Saturday at 2 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back, everyone. Well, all through 2018, the local nonprofit Volunteers in Medicine is raising awareness about its vital services providing healthcare to the working uninsured here in Duval County. Now, they're doing it through a 12 high-profile ambassadors, and we're so honored to have one here today. Now, each month of the year, different Women with Heart is doing their part to help Volunteers in Medicine. And this month's Woman with Heart is Dr. Alana Schrader. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Our paths have crossed many, many times because you are always out in the community and involved in health initiatives and women's initiatives. And we're so honored to have you here today.
Thank you.
Your official title, you're the Chief Medical Officer for Florida Blue. So talk a little bit about what it is that you do there. And I know just on top of what you do there, you are an incredible mentor and inspiration to so many women there at Florida Blue.
Well, thank you. What I do is I live out the mission of Florida Blue every day, which is to take care of and improve the health of our patients, our members, and our communities. And that is an opportunity that I relish every single day.
And let's talk about how that role with Florida Blue really crosses over to support Volunteers in Medicine, because these are folks who are uninsured and they need health care. And how do you create that partnership and that synergy between those organizations and what you do there?
Well, the mission of Volunteers in Medicine is, as you've said, to provide free outpatient primary and specialty medical services to Northeast Florida's working uninsured. And it is our mission to improve the health of our entire community. Mm-hmm. So we support Volunteers in Medicine in everything they do. It's an outstanding organization.
And how did they identify you as a woman with heart? I mean, I know you're a woman with heart, but how in this particular relationship are you really serving as an ambassador for them?
Well, I think that they have selected a fabulous group of a dozen or so women across our community who spend a fair amount of time volunteering in the community, especially in the arena of health and health initiatives. And I've done a fair number of those over the years. And of course, in my professional life, every single day, I see and understand the issues of our population regarding health and access to healthcare.
What is the challenge in our community for access to healthcare?
First of all, it is very expensive. So we know that the deductibles that people need to pay to have insurance and to access care can sometimes be more than they can afford. That's where the Volunteers in Medicine type of organization can fill in the gaps for us. Obviously, we do whatever we can to create affordable products that everybody can access, but everybody is a lofty goal.
Well, even when you have insurance, after the insurance covers what they're going to cover, that amount left over can be pretty hefty. It really can be. Even when you have insurance, I can't imagine not having any type of insurance. And so as part of your role as ambassador, you do have the opportunity to sparkle with some bling,
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I am fortunate enough to be wearing this gorgeous diamond heart that is given to us to wear for each of the months by Beards Jewelry. And it is really a conversation starter. Mm-hmm. So if I'm walking around and I'm wearing this gorgeous diamond heart, people will say, wow, where'd you get that? And I can then talk about the Volunteers in Medicine organization and the awareness campaign that we're doing.
Beards Jewelers is so generous in the community. They really do so much. They support so many organizations. And, you know, bling is always a great conversation starter.
Yes.
And they're located over in the town center area, in case you're curious. If you'd like to go see some other bling that they do have. And so grateful for their support. Because anytime you have any type of company supporting an effort, an organization, and partnering, it just makes that message bigger and stronger and further reaching. And are you also having an event? Share a little bit about that as well.
I am. I'm really excited about it. I've invited several of my colleagues to join me and take a tour of the Volunteers in Medicine Clinic. And there really is no better way to get to know what the clinic does than to witness it and experience it. So I'm really excited about that. It's during the third week of July. Very excited.
And let me ask you this. Is volunteer medicine, if someone is interested in supporting them in some way, do you know how they can go about doing that? Is maybe taking a tour the first step in educating yourself as to what the true needs of the community?
I think so. You know, there are a lot of interesting facts about our community. We have over 130,000 working uninsured just in Duval County alone. So visiting the clinic to see who comes and who needs the care that is provided there, I think, is really, really important. And I think what people will find is that these are folks that we know and actually work with every day. There are people who do our hair. There are people who might work in small businesses around town, restaurants, service. Many, many people that we see and experience every day are children's school bus drivers. These are the people who need the help of volunteers in medicine. And again, going to the clinic can allow everybody to witness that and experience it.
And do you know how would someone go about if they're, so we're talking, I guess, to folks who please help us support this effort. But what if you're one of those folks that you've just named and you need and you are part of the working uninsured? How do you go about seeking help from volunteers in medicine?
It's really easy. First of all, the clinic is located in downtown Jacksonville. It's on the corner of Ocean and Duval. It's open Tuesday through Friday, all day, and Saturday mornings. You can actually just show up. You can call them. I'm happy to even give the number. It's 904-399-2766.
Give it again, because somebody's searching for a pen right now.
904-399-2766. Or you can visit the website, which is VIM, stands for Volunteers in Medicine, -jacks.org.
And then just to come, you can just walk
in? Yes, you can walk in or you can call or go online and make an appointment.
And are they looking for professionals, doctors, nurses, PAs, healthcare? Are they looking for that support?
You know,
as
that's
well?
A great question. We're always looking for volunteers to help treat this population and to assist in providing services in our community. There are over 200 volunteers that work at Volunteers in Medicine. Over 80 of them are physicians, and we have nurses and other medical professionals. All specialties, especially women's care, well women exams, every specialty is represented.
And then finally, as we wrap up, what's your takeaway for folks listening? If they want to be the next woman with a heart and wear this necklace, what do you encourage them to do?
I encourage you all out there to give back. We all are so fortunate, many of us, and if we can, we should give back and put in our time, our energy, and create awareness amongst our community of friends and colleagues about the needs in our community that we see and experience every day.
Well, Dr. Alana Schrader, I didn't need to see that necklace to know that you are a woman with heart. Thank you so much for being here today and doing what you can to support volunteers in medicine. Stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back.
What can you get for $40? A day of health and wellness designed for you. Join WJCT and Baptist Health
at A Day for Her, Saturday, August 18th at the Hyatt Hotel. Fashion expert and everyone's girlfriend, Bobbi Thomas, will be this year's speaker. Tickets are $40 till July 15th, so get yours today. WJCT.org/events.
Well, if you are nostalgic for the days where you could walk and stroll down the boardwalk at the beach, dance in the dance hall off on the pier, or take your car and drive right up to your favorite spot on the beach, well, you are in luck. You can at least take a stroll back into history. Joining us this morning is Chris Hoffman, Executive Director with the Beaches Museum and History Park. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Let's talk a little bit about this amazing exhibit that you have that I think not only are the folks who have lived at the beaches a long time and these are kind of nostalgic days for them, but people who are new to the beaches area who may go, I had no idea that you could drive on the beach or you could dance on the pier.
And we definitely get both. We have a lot of people that remember those days of walking down the boardwalk. There was roller coaster, Ferris wheel, games, casinos even. And people have very vivid memories of those days. But we do have so many people here at the beach that are brand new, that had no idea you could drive your car on the beach. You could go out and, like you said, dance hall out on the pier. So we want to have a chance for people to see that, learn about the history, and learn about what Jacksonville Beach looked like for the most part of the most recent century. So we put that exhibit together. The Beaches Museum is right out on Beach Boulevard near 3rd Street, the big two-story yellow building with the train out front. So we invite people to come in, not only take a walk down the boardwalk, but to the permanent exhibit that has the history of all of our beaches area, as well as our historic buildings. So they can come and enjoy that, but really get a history of that boardwalk that started about early 1900s until, 60s, 70s, when it started to wind down.
And everybody kind of knows you with the train. I think the train is probably the most visible. What's the history with the train? Why is the train there?
The train was the train system was very important to the development of the beaches. Henry Flagler, a lot of people don't know, was instrumental in bringing the train lines to our area. And we actually had a Flagler Hotel. The Continental Hotel was in Atlantic Beach. And one of the things that we do as part of our mission is to bring awareness to that. Our mission is to preserve and share the distinct history and culture of the beaches area. So we recently did a historic marker to show where the Continental Hotel was, but also to bring light to the trains and the importance of their development. Beach Boulevard, if you look at it from the air, is straight as an arrow. That was the train track that you could take, hop on the train from downtown, take the train out to the beach, spend a day at the beach, what have you. So the train is demonstrative of that and how important the trains were to our beaches.
Oh, and you've kept it up. It's beautiful under glass. It's gorgeous. But you do have like activities for kids that they can come and learn and even about the train and touch and feel the train, right?
We do, yep. And I think kids even from my day remember at one point the train wasn't under glass and it was getting wear and tear from exposure to the salt air that we have out there at the beach. But we have protected it, but kids can still go and climb on it, learn about how trains work. We have train day coming up in September. That is a great opportunity for kids, young and old, young at heart, to come and learn about trains. So we have the depot, which was up in Mayport, as well as the section foreman's house. So those were all really important to the development of our area and the importance of the train lines that ran here.
And you bring up kids and moms. What can they do during the summer when you've got a couple? Before we wrap up, got some other events
we have
coming up.
A wonderful air-conditioned museum, and we are free and open to the public. So we do encourage people to come out, come check out the exhibit, and it's great for young and old to come out to the beach.
And concerts.
Museum.
You got and a good, healthy concert schedule.
They're going to start in August. We'll have our concerts at the chapel.
Oh, can you tell them I'm a fan of the museum and I'm a fan
Thank you
of Chris.
For your support.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Okay, everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Community hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours, available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com. The Jacksonville Record and Observer, introducing a new weekly business newspaper. News, trends, and analysis for your business to thrive in Northeast Florida. Delivered each Thursday throughout downtown Jacksonville. More at jacksdailyrecord.com.
Andrea Valobra was a rising pop star in Paraguay when she came out with this song about a woman who fears her abusive husband.
Some people say, oh my gosh, why are you doing this? All of us men are gonna feel like so bad.
And her career tanked overnight. Paraguay's Me Too moment continues to be a work in progress. That plus how Londoners greet Donald Trump, it's the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, the Fox News Trump White House connections. Roger Ailes' former vice president, who was considered Ailes' enforcer, Bill Shine, is now the White House deputy chief of staff for communications. Shine is alleged to have enabled a climate of sexual harassment at Fox. We'll talk with Vanity Fair's Gabriel Sherman, author of a book about Ailes and Fox. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Wisconsin was a beacon for progressive ideas and government for more than a century. It served as a laboratory of democracy, a cradle of the labor and environmental movements. But conservatives undid this liberal tradition in 2010 and 2016, a dramatic change that could serve as a national model. What happened in Wisconsin? Next time on 1A. Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back, everyone. Well, finally this hour, Madison Carr is only 17 years old, but is already a legend on the Jacksonville music scene. Madison Carr has been putting on her own shows and is open for many well-known artists. She'll be playing with Remedy Tree this Sunday at the Blue Jay Listening Room, a great venue if you have not been there yet. On August 5th, she'll be opening and hosting the 23rd annual China Cat Sunflower Festival at Carpools Museum. Madison, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So for folks who may not be so familiar with you, you've got your guitar, you're all hooked up. Talk a little bit about maybe your style of music and what your influences have been.
Sure. I grew up in a small town, Crystal River, and I spent a lot of time outside. And I grew up listening to a lot of Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan and just good folk music like that. So I definitely think that that can be heard in the music that I write and perform.
And at 17, that's was your influence? I've always listened
to a lot of older stuff.
And then how did you take that into your own style? Because obviously being 17, you're also going to have your own kind of view and way you want to present your music and yourself.
Right. I think a lot of what appeals to me about Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan and all these old singers is their storytelling through music. So I think that when I write music, a lot of it is storytelling and a lot of the lyrics do have some depth and history behind them. So,
and what is that like to perform in front of people and tell a story and share a piece of your heart or a piece of your experience?
It's so personal. Definitely a big part of who I am. I've been doing it for a long time now, and it's just really great to be able to share that with people.
What's been the best festival or the one that you really get excited about performing? Because I'm looking at this. If I read all of the festivals you perform, we would completely run out of time. So I'm going to ask you to tell me what's your favorite or what you get maybe most nervous about? Because nervous is usually means excited.
Yeah, definitely Florida Folk Festival. I've done it 3 times now, and it's just a really great place, and you meet so many interesting people, and it definitely has a really good-sized crowd, and there's a lot to do.
Okay, now, you play like 6 instruments, but you've brought 2 here today.
Yeah.
What are you going to play? Give me a little bit of background, and then I want you to just kind of take it away.
Sure. I'm going to play a song I wrote about a year ago after a folk festival called Will McLean. And this song is called Hummingbird Quiet, and I have my guitar and harmonica. So,
all right, Madison Carr, take it away.
Thank you. Tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind,
boy on the sorrow, leave the rest all to time. No sleep left for me and no time to deny. I'm leaving tomorrow with a hummingbird quiet in my mind. Heading out there cause the mountains always win. They tell me it's like home if you don't have any kin. You make my insides feel like honey, warm and sweet and sticky. So I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. Don't know where I'll let time decide. The roads of my mind all wind and wind. And I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. I used to overthink and now I overbear. Do you remember when we put bugs in our hair? Caught them in a jar and shook them all around. Wore them on our head like a chemical crown. Now you're fast asleep and you may never know why. I do the things I do, but I do them all for you. I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. Boil the sorrow, leave the rest all to time. Oh, no sleep left for me and no time to deny. I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. La da 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 da.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
I see why they call you the old soul and you're only 17 years
Thank
old.
You.
Reminder, she's going to be at the Blue Jay Listening Room this Sunday. And then on August 5th, opening and hosting the 23rd annual China Cat Sunflower Festival at Carpels Museum. I'm going to read the stuff where I say goodbye. Would you mind playing underneath me and make me sound better?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. All right. Well, she's Madison Carr. Thank you so much, David Luckin. You better add that to your musical repertoire. That's going to be our show today. Thank you so much to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is the fabulous Kevin Mearshart. Michelle Coram runs the board. The show's theme is composed and performed by Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Let me tell you, I'm Charlene Shirk. It has truly been an honor filling in for the Melissa Ross and being on this amazing program that does so much for our community. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. The very brilliant A.G. Gancarski is going to be your host for tomorrow for our weekly media roundtable. If you're listening to the rebroadcast, stay tuned for more music. I don't know how it's going to be any better than what you're listening to right now. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.